Okay, for the benefit of the people who were at the coffee morning just before the midterm break and didn't get to class, I spent a bit of time on that Thursday looking at the political crisis and looking in detail at each one of the chancellors and the role that they played in Hitler's rise to power. We started off looking at Hermann Müller, and we made the point that Hermann Müller was a member of the SPD, the Socialist Party. He headed up the Grand Coalition, which was a coalition of five parties. And during his reign, the big problem was unemployment. And in March 1930, Hermann Müller needed to produce a finance bill to actually pay for the rising unemployment. Unemployment was reaching about 2 million at the start of 1930. And he could not get the five parties in his coalition to agree on how to deal with unemployment. So he approached Hindenburg and asked for Hindenburg to use Article 48, and Hindenburg refused. Consequently, Müller had to resign. And that's significant because Müller's government was the last government which really tried to rule through the Reichstag. From then on, it was Article 48 and presidential decree which was ruling Germany. The next chancellor then was Heinrich Brüning, who ruled, or who was chancellor from March 1930 to May 1932. He's known as the Hunger Chancellor because of his austerity program, which saw huge cuts in spending by the government. So things like unemployment benefit, education, healthcare, these were all cut. And as well as that, wages were kept down, and this led to a lot of hunger and an increase in unemployment. And unemployment increased to 6 million by the end of his tenure in 1932. Brüning tried to get the Reichstag to pass laws, but he found it impossible. Therefore, Hindenburg actually called for an election in September 1930. And this was a disaster, as the September 1930 election was the one where the Nazi Party's vote rose from 12 seats to 107 seats. It also saw rises for the Communist Party as well. Things got so bad under Brüning that basically Germany had been turned into a presidential dictatorship. I made the point that in 1932, only five laws were actually passed by the Reichstag. Whereas there were 66 laws passed using the presidential decree, Article 48. We also made the point about Brüning that his austerity he had two aims really on getting office. He wished to get reparations cancelled, that was one thing, and he thought he could use the economic crisis of the Great Depression to put pressure on the Allies to reduce or cancel reparations altogether. And he also felt that the Great Depression was a great opportunity for Germany to attack the welfare state, so to cut back on things like unemployment benefit and health benefits for the poor. Brüning was from the Centre Party, which represented the interests of the middle classes. He was also an ex-army officer, which probably explains why Hindenburg was prepared to support him. Okay, during Brüning's chancellorship, there was also the presidential election, the presidential election of 1932. The presidential election was significant because Hitler stood against Hindenburg and forced Hindenburg into a second ballot in April of 1932. Eventually, Hindenburg does win with 19 million votes compared to Hitler's 13.5 million. However, this was an embarrassment for Hindenburg. Hindenburg had actually been pressurized into standing again for president. He was now in his 80s and probably felt that he would have been better retiring. However, Brüning felt that, you know, Hindenburg was needed because he was a figure that many Germans respected. And in this crisis where the Reichstag was out of control and contained many communists and Nazis, Hindenburg was a force of stability. However, I get the feeling that Hindenburg never really forgot the fact that Brüning...
As I said there, Hindenburg never really forgot the fact that Brüning humiliated him in this election. Also, after the election, or during the election, there was a lot of violence between the communists and the Nazis. There were over 100 people killed in the streets of Berlin in the run-up to the election. Brüning took the decision to ban the SA, but really the situation was becoming more and more out of control. Later, after the election of after the presidential election, that is, of April 1932, Bruning also decided that using the bankrupt estates of the old Prussian aristocracy and giving the land to the unemployed would be a good way of actually trying to stop the violence. If you could get the unemployed actively involved in some sort of scheme, it would mean that they would have less time to be thinking about joining radical groups like the communists or the Nazis. But this idea of breaking up bankrupt estates and giving the land to the unemployed was very unpopular with Hindenburg, who was from that Junker, J-U-N-K-E-R, Junker class of landowners. And eventually, in May 1932, Bruning was actually forced to resign. Hindenburg then decided to put Papen in charge, and Papen was a monarchist, and he led a government which had no members of the Reichstag in it, interestingly, and for that reason his government was known as the Cabinet of Barons. Franz von Papen tried to get the support of the Reichstag for some of his measures. However, on the first day of his chancellorship, the Nazis walked out of the chamber, making it impossible for Bruning or von Papen to do anything other than call an election. So the election was called for July 1932, and this was the election where the Nazis became the largest party with 230 seats. Von Papen, I maybe should say as well that the communists also raised their vote in that election as well. So the Reichstag was becoming more and more ungovernable. Papen then appealed to Hindenburg to allow him to rule like a dictator and to give him full powers. However, Hindenburg insisted that Papen try to get support of the Reichstag, so Papen then calls another election. And this election in November 1932 didn't get much better result. The Communist Party increased to 100 seats. The Nazi Party vote fell, which has some significance later, but it still left von Papen in the position where he could not control the Reichstag. Von Papen had also tried to curry favour with the Nazis. He had lifted the ban on the SA and he had offered some sort of coalition with the Nazis. However, Hitler totally refused. After the July election of 1932, Hitler demanded that he be made chancellor and that he would not accept a coalition with any other party. Finally, in November of 1932, Kurt von Schleicher was in the background meeting with Hindenburg and undermining Papen. And Schleicher believed that he could actually get the situation under control. He came up with a plan that he could split the Nazi party and by offering the vice chancellorship to Gregor Strasser. Schleicher believed if he could get Schleicher on his side as vice chancellor, then he could split the Nazi party in two, but use enough of the Nazis in the Reichstag to actually get the job of government done, if you like. But again, Schleicher found this impossible. He could not get the Nazis to agree. And meanwhile, while Schleicher is manipulating in the background, von Papen feels very aggrieved at the way that he was relieved of office for Schleicher. So von Papen is meeting with Hitler in the background, and von Papen and Hitler eventually come to an agreement that Hitler would be made chancellor and von Papen would be his vice chancellor. The Nazis would also be given four seats in cabinet. They presented this deal to Hindenburg late in January of 1933, and also present was Oscar Hindenburg, who was also putting pressure on his father to appoint Hitler. So eventually, under all this pressure from Papen, from Oscar Hindenburg, and from the industrialists like Krupp, Thyssen, and Schacht, Hindenburg eventually relented and appointed Hitler as Chancellor of Germany on the 30th of January, 1933.